give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast, episode 53. High school never ends. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 53, recorded on May 11, 2016, brought to you by RayRay.net and syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. I am your sexy party host, Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray. And as you guys know, I am an NBA online writer, but we talk about whatever the heck we want on this podcast. It's life, and it's fundamental. So sit back, relax, I don't know, drink some coffee or eat some ice cream, whatever, and listen to us talk about life and basketball and whatever the heck we want to talk about. In this episode, I talk to Serena Winters of Lakers Nation. We talk about her career, Los Angeles Lakers, of course, and a bit of the NBA playoffs. So without any further ado, really, we're going to go ahead and talk to Serena and hope you enjoy this interview. All right? Scratch. Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 53. My guest for this episode is an old friend of mine, even though we really didn't talk much when we were coworkers, but she's the lead reporter for Lakers Nation, the wonderful, the excellent, the outstanding Serena Winters. How's it going?
Well, hey there, Ray. Finally good to chat with you on this podcast. I know we see each other from time to time.
Yeah, like Las Vegas Summer League, where we would talk for like 3 minutes, and then I get my hand tangled on your hair when we were doing interviews or whatever, but other than that, I mean, you know, it's finally good to talk to you for, you know, a good extended period of time, I suppose.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I really don't know you that much, even though, again, we were co-workers at one point, even though it was very fleeting.
Short-lived.
Very much so. Did you always want to be a sports broadcaster? It's like when you were a little girl, you're like, oh, yeah, I want to be this. Is that what it came down to?
I would say the moment it all clicked with me that I knew I wanted to be in sports broadcasting was when I was a senior in high school. And what happened for me was I was an athlete my whole life. And when I was in high school, I was always a three-sport athlete, playing basketball, playing track and field. And there's a car driving by that's incredibly loud. So sorry if you guys just heard that. But yeah, I played basketball, track, and golf when I was in high school. And when I did that, I was also at something called Mod United Nations, which was basically debating about world issues with other students. And so I actually just kind of combined the two, my love for public speaking and chatting with people up on a stage, and then my love for sports and being an athlete. And so when I was a senior in high school, I kind of put the two together and was like, that's what I want to do. And here I am.
Did you aspire to play in the WNBA or maybe even, like, say, I don't know, an Olympian? I don't know.
Yes, I would say my actual, as embarrassing as this might sound, my first thing that I wanted to do, like, you know, when you're a kid and people ask you, what did you want to be when you grew up? I would say that I wanted to be the first woman in the NBA. Yeah, but then I obviously wasn't good enough for that, and I was 5'5" and a little point guard who could run around, but not good enough to be the first woman in the NBA, so I opted to talk about the NBA instead.
What about the WNBA?
You know what's funny is that didn't really ever cross my mind. I'm not sure why, maybe because I didn't watch any WNBA growing up, and for whatever reason, you know, WNBA players weren't my role models growing up. It was more NBA players were. So, right. Which is also an interesting topic and goes back to kind of just the promotion of the WNBA and where the WNBA is at in relation to the NBA. And I know it's kind of sad as that sounds, but that's how I grew up. I grew up watching NBA games, and I grew up, you know, with them being my role models and not the WNBA. And I loved playing with guys when I was a kid. So there was, you know, I was like on the Boys and Girls Club team and I was the only girl, you know. And so for me, I kind of grew up playing around guys. So I think that's kind of why.
Yeah, and the WNBA was kind of a fleeting league, like, you know, 10 years ago. It's not as big as it is
exactly
now, so I understand that, yeah. So how did you get started with Lakers Nation?
Let's see, how did I get started? Well, I used to do a bunch of internships and a bunch of free work. And let's see, after college, I interned with ESPN, for Jim Rome. For Jim mm-hmm. Rome is Burning, and I was interning for Fuel TV, which was Action Sports at the time. And I was driving back up and forth to Santa Barbara from Orange County every week to co-host our own little sports TV show up there for Channel 17 for an hour once a week. So I was doing that, trying to stay, keep myself just in the door. And at the same time, I was on LinkedIn, and I was searching for people on LinkedIn that were in the industry that I could contact, send over a resume, get to know them, yada, 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 after college. And I found someone, you might know who he is. His name's Brian Champlin. He used to work for Lakers Nation. I think it was more in the business side of it. And I contacted him and said, hey, you know, I'm Serena Winters, yada, yada, yada. This is what I want to do. Is there anybody you can contact me with over at Lakers Nation? And so he put me in contact with the founder of Lakers Nation, and that's how it started. I did free work and volunteer work, and basically worked for free for a while before, you know, doing obviously what I'm doing now. But that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah. Do you think it was going to get this big? Because it's huge now. Lakers Nation is just out there, you know?
Yeah. Did I think it was going to get this big? You know, when I start something or when I'm in something, I kind of don't think of there being a limit to it. And I actually used to intern with the Lakers when I was in college, my senior year of college. So I got a lot of connections through that. So I don't know if I ever honestly really thought about whether or not we were going to be this big. It was just a matter of put as much of my heart and my soul and, you know, time and effort and energy into it and see where it goes. And it's great to see where we're at now. But honestly, yeah. Ray, I never questioned whether or not we were going to get this big or not. That didn't really ever cross my mind.
Yeah, which is a great attitude to have, by the way, because if you think it's going to end sometime and it's like, well, it's kind of a defeatist attitude. So, you know, I get what you're thinking about. So, the Lakers this season, which is obviously an understatement, but they've been really bad this season. But you've covered the team when they were good, and you've covered the team the last few years when they're bad. Is the job that much harder when they're a bad team? Or,
you know, I get asked that a lot. And what I would say is that because people will come up to me and say, oh, my gosh, I feel so bad for you. You must just have the worst job right now. And I come back at them and say, no, you know, I really don't. I mean, there's definitely a huge difference when the team is doing this poorly, and having these past two seasons be the worst in franchise history is very, very difficult. But the reason that's difficult is more because, you know, when teams are losing all the time, you kind of get that attitude surrounding the team or that low energy after games. But at the same time, these past 2 years, we've always had stuff to talk about. And that's kind of the beauty with this Lakers organization, is that even though, you know, they were the worst team in the Western Conference, and the second worst team in the NBA, there's still plenty to talk about. And we also, in terms of with Kobe, it being his last year, this past season, we always had something, and there was always kind of, you know, something magical surrounding what could happen with Kobe's last season. And for whatever reason, there is just always something surrounding the Lakers. So as bad as people might think as it is to cover the team when it was, you know, when they were doing this bad and they were struggling this much, the job is different and you have less energy, and sometimes guys don't want to talk to you as much, and it can be difficult to ask questions when, you know, you keep asking the same thing over and over and over again because the Lakers look like the same bad team over and over and over again. But the job itself, you know, I absolutely love what I do, and I love the people, you know, in the organization and the colleagues around the organization. And so even though it was a rough past two seasons, you know, I still enjoy my job.
Yeah, and there's always content regardless.
Exactly.
And it is the Lakers. They're the most popular franchise probably in the world, really. You know, like when people talk sports, they talk about a few soccer clubs here and there, and then they talk about the Lakers. So it's all around the world. So, you know, there's always something. Let's talk about the team for a little bit here. So from what you saw with the team this season, did it seem like there was a lot of turmoil going on as has been mentioned out in the media, or was this group pretty together despite all the losing?
I would actually say the group was pretty together. A lot of people think there was a ton of turmoil, but with the exception of the drama surrounding the whole D'Angelo Russell, you know, Nick Young thing.
Right.
I thought for a team that it felt like they were losing every game, the team still seemed pretty together. You know, when you were in the locker room, you didn't feel any animosity between the players. Like I said, with the exception of that whole young D'Angelo Russell thing, with that week, I could feel it when you walked in the locker room. You could feel like there was something going on there. But with the exception of that, I would say they're pretty together. And, you know, a lot of people would say that D'Angelo Russell and Byron Scott, you know, had this huge, just, you know, distaste for each other, whatever it was. I don't think that was the case. I think it was just that, you know, you got a young rookie kid and you got this head coach who's an old school type guy that in his mind is kind of trying to be also a bit of a father figure and show him that he's not a veteran and D'Angelo's not understanding what his role is. So he's a kid and getting frustrated. And those are natural things within any organization. So, you know, I think that they were probably more together than people would have thought.
Did you agree with the job that Byron Scott did when he sat Russell, D'Angelo Russell, early in the season, then starting him later on in the season?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting choice. I remember going back to just the first game of the season. I think he had D'Angelo playing off the ball, and that was interesting. And then he sat in and then put it back. And I could see where Byron Scott was coming from, because I think that when you have, you know, veterans on the team, like a Lou Williams, for example, you know, how do you set a message or how do you set some authority if you're going to give rookies the ropes, you know, from day one? What type of message does that send to the veteran guys the Lakers signed to potentially try to win games? But then at the same time, you have to balance that whole balancing act of, but wait, the Lakers, you know, drafted D'Angelo because he's supposed to be the future of this organization and because you need to develop him. So, you know, it's hard to say whether I agreed with it or not. I would say that I definitely questioned some of his decisions, but, you know, I'm not the coach of the team, and he did them for reasons that he thought were valid at the time. I think more than anything, Ray, I think that Byron was more trying to mold D'Angelo in terms of showing him, like, this is how the NBA works. You can't come in here as a rookie, you know, at 19 years old and have this sense of entitlement that you're going to be given the keys right away. And I think Byron was kind of trying to make a statement that this is not something that's just going to be given to you. I need to see that you are going to work for it every step of the way, also because I want you to feel like you earned it, not that it was given to you. So I think that those were kind of struggles between both of them, and I don't know that Byron, per se, was clear in terms of why he was doing the things that he was doing. So that's probably one of the reasons why D'Angelo struggled with, you know, well, I don't know what my role is, or, you know, I don't know exactly where I fit in. You know, and I think there might have been a couple communication issues there, because probably my guess is from Byron's standpoint, because of kind of how he is as a coach, he's thinking to himself, well, I don't need to explain every little thing that I'm doing to D'Angelo because I'm the coach, he's the rookie, and he should just respect the decision that I'm making. But, you know, it's a new generation of players, it's a different era, and a lot of these guys, you kind of have to mold or conform to the fact that it's a different generation, and you want to make sure your players and the coaches and everybody's on the same page, and I don't think necessarily that they were.
So let's say you're Mitch Kupchak, let's say you're Jim Buss, you're the front office, and there have been rumors about this. If the Lakers get the first pick of the draft, would you keep it or would you trade it?
Well, that's going to depend on, you know, who you could trade it for, you know? But you know, looking at the draft class, and I haven't done an incredible amount of research on it yet, but this, I don't get the feeling that this is an incredible draft class. And so I would lean more towards, if I could, trading the pick, and getting somebody that could really help you get on track right away. And my reasoning behind that is pretty simple. It's that the Lakers have had, you know, two of the worst seasons in franchise history. If they have another season like this, you know, kind of the aura surrounding the organization has been on quite a slump the past couple of years. It can't go any lower. You don't want to continue, whether or not the perception is true, you don't want to continue that this perception of this organization is just kind of going down the dumps ever since Dr. Buss passed away. So, you know, the Lakers need to, whatever they do, they need to do something where they are back on track immediately. And so I would probably opt towards trading the pick if possible.
Say a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler.
Oh,
it's been rumored around.
I would love to have Paul George on the Lakers. You know, I think he would look great in the purple and gold. So if that could happen, you know, I don't know why Indiana would make that trade. We were talking about this in the office, and, you know, someone was making the argument that, well, they're going to be in a rebuild, so they would do that to rebuild. But in my mind, it's like, if you're Indiana, you know, you have Paul George. Why are you trading him away? Why can't you build those pieces and still have Paul George? But, hey, if Mitch Kupchak and Jim can pull off something where they can trade, knock on wood, I hate saying that we're going to trade the pick when we don't have the pick yet, but if they can pull that off, then I'm all for that.
Yeah, and besides, Indiana just made the postseason.
Right.
took the Raptors to 7. So, how crazy was it, by the way, when you got to cover Kobe Bryant's final game?
Oh my gosh!
That seemed like a madhouse.
Oh my gosh! That is an experience for me that I will never forget. I'll never forget any second of those 48 hours, and also the entire road trip, his last road trip, because I was there every step of the way. It was insane, and the energy in that arena for his last game is something that I will never, ever, ever forget, and it's pretty neat because I think that anybody who was there that night, I think we can all kind of have a special bond over kind of being there, as lame as that might sound, because there was just something about that night that is, you know, as cliche as it sounds, it really was so magical, you know, and I'm looking over at, you know, big-time media members. You got guys like J.A. Adande who are on their feet with their hands up cheering. You know, you don't see that every day. Uh-huh. So it was incredible. It was no sleep, but incredible. That night, you know, I actually stayed at the Lakers, or I stayed at Staples Center all night long and did not sleep, and worked until about 8 in the morning, and then went straight from Staples Center to the Lakers practice facility, because the next day, thank you, Lakers, they wanted to do the exit, you know, all of the exit interviews the day after Kobe's final game. So I went straight there from Staples Center, but it was awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those vivid moments you just can't forget,
never
like
forget
every
it.
Second.
Oh, never forget it.
Right. Is this your favorite moment as a broadcaster so far?
Yes. Yeah, hands down.
Easily, right?
Not even a question. You know, people, if you would have asked me that before Kobe's last game, I probably wouldn't. I'd have to think about it, you know, and not know. Now it is easy. Hands down, that entire week was, actually. But his last game, by far, the best.
Or maybe before it happened, you could have been like, oh, my favorite one will be Kobe Bryant's final game. That's your thought process.
Well, yeah,
right?
But you don't know until that game hits and you're seeing him come out and struggling, but then you're seeing him hit 30 and you're thinking to yourself, okay, Kobe's last game, you know, 30 something night, that's pretty good. Oh, then he hits 40 and he goes, oh wow, he hit 40, nice. Kobe hitting 40 in his last game. Then he just keeps going and you're like, there's no way he's going to hit 50, right? There's no way this guy's going to hit 50. Then he hits 50 and everybody's up on their feet and they're like, no way, Kobe's got a 50-point game in his final game. And then Ray, he just keeps going. He just keeps going. Yeah. So we're like, wait a second. There's no way he's going to hit 55. There's no way he's going to hit 58. And then he hits 60 and I just, you know, everybody's just kind of jaw dropped. It just felt magical. Very cliche and I know it, but I'll never forget it.
Yeah, it's almost like the 81-point game, right? Or is this more magical than the 81-point game, you think?
Well, you know, I'm biased because for me,
that
being his final game and just having covered the, you know, those past couple of years of his career and seeing it come to an end like that, you know, it's like when you're writing a script for a movie, that's how you want to write it. And the fact that was not a movie and that's how it came in real life, it was just incredible.
Mm-hmm. One question about the postseason really quick. Who do you think is going to win a championship this season?
Whew, well, let's see here. I mean, the Warriors are, I think, going to come out of the West. I do. And I can't see anybody beating Cleveland. So I'm going to say Warriors again. Warriors again. But I'm really interested in the San Antonio Spurs Thunder series because I really think that could be anybody's game. So that one interests me a lot.
Yeah, right. And the thing is, Curry just returned from an injury, so that's a big thing right now.
Oh, of course. But, you know, we saw him in that game. Yeah, that's why Portland really screwed up on that one, right? Because they really did not take advantage of the fact that Curry was out, because they could have had a better series than this. So Curry, though, I mean, he struggled to start that game, and it seemed like once he just continued to shoot and got in that rhythm, it was just like he was back to normal. And after the game, I know he said that he wasn't 100%, but if that's Curry not at 100%, hey, I'll take 17 points in OT any day.
Yeah, 27 points after the third quarter. That's just ridiculous. You know, it's Kobe-like, you might say, right?
Okay, I guess you could say that.
So, what's next for you? You've been at Lakers Nation for a while. You're going to continue Lakers Nation. Do you have any aspirations after this?
You know, I'm just going to keep working hard, Ray. Keep hustling. That's what I like to do, and we'll see what comes.
Serena, you've been great. You've been outstanding. And we finally got the chat. Oh, my goodness.
So, 20-minute conversation between you and I. This is about 17 minutes longer than any conversation you and I have had.
Right. So go ahead and plug your stuff, plug your website, plug your Twitter, whatever you need to plug.
Yeah, sure. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Serena Winters, just like it sounds. Our Lakers Nation Twitter account, at Lakers Nation. Our website, LakersNation.com, and shout-outs to our guys over there that help run everything, Corey Hansford and Ryan Ward, and my video guy, Andrew Martinez, who's great. And I've got Instagram, that's Serena_Winters, and Snapchat, Serena.Winters.
Serena, we shall do this again soon.
Thank
All right? You. Thanks. Thank you.
This is Dave McMenamin from ESPN, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Stephen Curry on the remix.
No, I look the best.
James, I noticed that you think you can sing, but this is the remix with Stephen Curry. You should probably not quit your day job, so put down that mic and stick with basketball. Basketball. Basketball.
Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry.
You were with Harden, now you're with the best. My life is a party, and you are my guest. You think you're a singer, but your notes are flat. Please button up that.
Thank you so much to Serena Winters of Lakers Nation for doing this little chat. And before we end this podcast with a good old kicking it old school segment, let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the podcast on Stitcher and RareRay.net. And this is being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow the podcast on Twitter at RayRayIsFun. You can follow my personal Twitter at TheNoLookPass. Visit my site at TheNoLookPass.com. And you can also check out my other podcast, which is All Wrestling, TJR Wrestling Podcast at TJRWrestling.net. That's all I got. Here's an old school segment with me and EJ. Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ Christian's here with me, another late night podcast. How's it going, sir?
Hey, Moraldi, what's up?
So, usually in this segment, we usually talk about something old from, like, you know, music or sports or movies or TV series, whatever. But sometimes we like to get a little personal. A couple episodes ago, we talked about, you know, our old crushes and stuff like that. This time around, we're going to talk about how we were in high school.
So, basically, personal experience in high school. So we're going to actually get a little personal now. Well, basically, our listeners are going to know a little about us a little more. Our history.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, it's funny because people say that I haven't changed much since high school, and that's probably true. But, you know, I was once quiet.
I tend to believe that, Ray. I really tend to believe that.
Yeah. But I was once quiet, believe it or not. Ninth grade, I was a pretty quiet kid, and, you know, like, it took me a while to, you know, just have a conversation with somebody, you know? Because I'm the kind of guy that, like, I didn't want to ruffle any feathers. So I would just be quiet and just, you know, mind my own business and stuff like that. So, And then in 10th grade, I made some friends. They kind of made me come out of my shell. And, you know, from there, it was like, I like to make people laugh. So we kind of became jokers overnight, I suppose. You know? So, yeah, that's how I was in high school. I got along with the jocks because, you know, my love for basketball.
Yeah.
And I got along with the nerds because stereotypically I'm Asian, so I'm going to get along with the nerds. So I kind of had like the best of both worlds basically. But I didn't have a group to hang out with like afterwards, like until like my senior year. But, you know, in the end it's all about, oh, I'm the guy that like, you know, I'm the smart kid that likes basketball and video games. And, right. You know, and I suppose I was popular enough to get nominated for Homecoming King. I didn't obviously get to the top five, but I didn't get to the top five, but you know, I was nominated a few times, so.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was cool, I guess, you know. I mean, high school was fun. I mean, I didn't have too many bad experiences in high school, so.
That's a good thing. I mean, that's a really good thing. I mean, hell, you do something there. I can't even think I did that. Like, you know, being a running Homecoming King or anything.
I almost thought I was a joke or something, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. High school for me was weird because high school for me was so many phases. Mm-hmm. In a sense where, you know, it's so strange because I think a lot of who I am today. A good portion of it is because of high school. Like, mm-hmm. My book, music, especially, me becoming a musician, obviously I'm an actor anymore today, but I was 10 years ago, and a lot of the seeds are planted from my high school years, and that was like sophomore, junior year, when I got into like hard rock and metal and all that stuff. But, there's a lot of phases I went through high school. Like, I went through the phase of, like, you know, of that rebellious. I was never a bad kid, but I was very rebellious and an underachiever. You know, I had a hard time focusing in school, but, you know, when I had my mindset to something, I did very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through a phase for like a year or two where I was a little bit of a rebel, you know, and that kind of music spoke to me in a lot of ways as a kid, 16 years old. And then I went through a religious phase for a while. My last year in high school, well, I went through mm-hmm. Very, you know, Christian, and, you know, I became a little more, you know, a little conservative in some of my ways, you know, so there's a lot of phases I went through in those 4 years, but a lot of those, really, years, I mean, it's been 20 years since, you know, but, you know, at the same time, the seeds are planted from me to who I am today through high school, you know, and I look back at high school now, it's so weird, because, like, looking back at it now, it's like, it's a bit of a blur at times, and I look from the things that stood out, and I really don't see more from high school, to be honest with you. I have more friends from middle school, I thought, than I do from high school. It's really strange.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, obviously, if I could, I mean, of course, I would like to relive those times, but I wouldn't want to go back either, you know?
I mean, there's certain things that I would have done differently, like, there were girls, like, you know, probably one of the biggest things to this day, I hate myself for it. I'm a lot different now about it, but there were a lot of girls I could have dated that I did not, because I was so scared and self-conscious of who I was, talking to myself.
Yeah.
There were girls who admitted after that they had crushes on me. That crushes.
Right.
I'm like, wow, really? You know, and had I stepped up this way, I would have ex-mom girlfriends that, you know, and, you know, there's some girls I dated that I wish I didn't date, I know, back then, too. There are things I could have done differently in certain ways, but, like, in high school, it's kind of a transition phase that you live and you learn, and, you know, it's a solid foundation for where you go from there, pretty much. At least going to college in the 20s, you know, but, I mean, I would go back a little bit and change something. There was some good that came out of high school for me, and there was some bad that came out of high school for me, you know, but I go back, actually, a little bit.
The thing is,
I try to hold on to, what I wish I'd do is some of the friendships I still have, and I wish I still had people. I wish I held on to those little friendships.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like, when we're teenagers, we're going to be self-conscious about everything. You know, like, we're so afraid of what so-and-so is going to say if you do a certain thing. You know, that includes, like, asking out girls and stuff like that, you know? Like, are they going to make fun of you? So, obviously, it's tough. And, you know, the part of the experience of why we become, you know, the way we are now is because of what we experienced through. Like, obviously, like, me now, like, I would not hesitate to ask out a girl if I like her, you know? Like, I'm not going to hesitate at all. You know, but when you're 16, when you're still insecure about everything and you're still trying to work your way around the world, stuff like that, you're always going to think about what everyone's going to say. Of course, you're going to hesitate to ask out a girl or whatever, you know, like I'm positive I missed out on like probably like 35 girls I want to ask out. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, we were young, you know, that's how we were. Also, like, a lot of people don't know this, but in my senior year, I was part of choir, so I was a tenor. Yeah, I was a tenor, so that's why you obviously once in a while you'll see, you know, singing Instagram videos of myself or whatever, because I do like to sing, but I kind of, again, when you're in high school, when you're thinking of how everyone's gonna think about you, like I kind of wish I did this earlier. Or I could have been in the highest, you know, level of choir or whatever if I started earlier. But I know I could have done it if I started earlier. But yeah, I sang, and then I wrote for the school paper,
right?
In my senior year, which I've always loved to write, but you know, I really didn't think I could make a living out of it until like way later on for some reason. So again.
I used to, I never wrote a paper necessarily, but what I did do, I didn't find middle school was more so anything else, but it kind of came to high school. I used to write, a lot. Before blogs, I brag all the time, you know, I was blogging for a thing, in the mid-90s.
Pen and paper journals, right? Pen and paper journals, because I used to do that too.
I used to write, pretend I was a columnist, and I used to write, like, I didn't put it anywhere else but like myself. I write myself about like, you know,
yeah,
stuff, football games, basketball games and stuff. But I would never really put that out there. I didn't take the time in high school and going to college to you know, maybe try to get a girl's degree or something like that. You know, obviously, you know, I did some TV and I did some stuff in high school, you know, a couple like media stuff. Small, of course, but I didn't push heavily into that. In my 4 years, I did my freshman year, I did that. I pushed, like, you know, on TV and stuff. Other than that, I didn't push beyond that. It never came back to me reaching that much.
Any regrets about high school? That, besides, obviously, like, you know, not asking out the girls that you want to date or whatever, that you wish you could have done in high school.
I'll tell you right now, my biggest regret probably is not being more focused with students and not taking the process more seriously. And, you know, not, you know, had I did that, I probably went to college. I mean, look, I don't regret not going to college and stuff like that, but I think I missed out on an experience that I cannot get back now. You know, people say college is great because of, you know, obviously education, but, you know, obviously the partying and the, you know, lifelong friends you make out of college and stuff, that's basically worth it. And I think because I didn't take school as serious in high school, you know, I was a very smart kid. I'm still very smart. I thought I'd talk copy, but when I had my mind set up something, I was really, really, you know, I did really well in school.
Right.
But I had my mind set up, like, you know, that was not always the case. I wish I really put, you know, put more effort into the schoolwork and the whole, and all that, and taking it more serious and really trying to transition another life myself. You know, like I said, I don't regret really a lot of things, but that's something I wish I'd probably stuck with a little bit. You know, take it a little more seriously and a little more focused, and, you know.
I think it's a lot of us where we wish
we... This is a podcast, Ray.
I mean,
holy crap.
Yeah, that's a lot of us though. Like, we wish we put more focus on, you know, schools, studies and whatever. And I know one thing that I definitely regret was that they were practically handing this to me, but they wanted me to be the school mascot, and I didn't take it.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I was friends with a lot of the cheerleaders back in high school. And, you know, I was just hanging out with them, whatever. And then the advisor went up to me. It's like, oh, so the mascot spot is open. I mean, you know, you're into school spirit. And I think you'd be perfect for this job. And I'm like, yeah, but I'd have to wake up at 6 and I don't really want to do that. So I decided not to do it. But, you know, looking back, I wish I did it. Because, you know, it probably would have gotten me, you know, more sociable at that, you know, point in life.
Right.
You know, be more brave in front of, you know, crowds of people or at that point in life as well. So, you know,
that's
things that I...
That's something I would say about myself in high school. I was very social. I'm definitely an extrovert, you know. I was that way too back then. Even though I was very shy about girls and certain things, in terms of being myself, I didn't really care. You know, to be honest with you, I was very out there in terms of, I was a dork. I mean, I was really a dork. Like, I was that skinny black kid, dorky, you know, trying to figure things out. And, you know, like I said, you live and learn. It's one of those things where you go through that process for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, I was frightened to be in front of stage, although, you know, when given a chance, I did well, but, you know, for the most part, it's like just the thought of being in front of stage or in front of the crowds was frightening to me, you know? Now I don't have that problem anymore, and, you know, I just wish I did it at that point in time, is what I'm saying, but, you know, and it would have been a good experience being a school mascot. It's like, hey, I was a school mascot once, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't do it. We were the Buccaneers. I would have been a pirate.
Are you a Buccaneer?
Yeah.
My wife's high school the same way too, the Buccaneers.
Ah. Yeah.
My was Spartan.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
Although I went to high school. I went to the Braddock Senior High for the first year and a half of my high school year in Alvarez. And then, by the way, Braddock's mascot was a bulldog. They were new at the time too. And then I went to Miami Southern Senior my last 2.5 years in high school, and that's what the Spartans were. Our football team was amazing. Our sports team was amazing. And I did play sports the first year in high school. I played football, but I was too skinny to get any play time. Go figure. And then now I'm not even close to getting any. It's a weird one. Funny how 20 years grows on you.
Right.
So weird.
I did track. I did basketball. I wanted to do football, but my parents wouldn't let me, and now I get it.
Yeah.
now I totally get why. So, because I wanted to be a tight end because I wasn't the fastest, but, you know, I was big enough and, you know, fast enough. So I thought it would be a perfect position for me. But, you know, I told my parents this, and they're like, no, you're not playing football. So I decided to do track instead and did the long jump and the sprints and the relays and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I did basketball as well. And I stopped growing at 14, so I figured out I'm 5'7". So,
wow.
Yeah. And also, like, a friend of the podcast, a good friend of ours, Daryl Wilson, we went to the same high school. Yep, he was 2 years ahead of me, but I didn't know him at the time. He was friends with my brother who were in the same class. So, and I just got to know Daryl like 3 years ago. And then when he told me that we went to the same high school, I'm like, uh-oh, that's not cool, you know? You're stalking me!
I know the sushi story. Got to go to sushi together a couple times and stuff.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, but, you know, I just, I, I, did, Yeah, I didn't know that at the time that we went to the same high school. So, like, I didn't even hear of him. So,
and you said he was 2 grades ahead of you. He was two levels ahead of you.
Yeah, he was 2 grades higher than me. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So,
he's old.
Yeah.
I hope that guy hears this.
He's gonna be like, I want to be on your podcast next now, Ray.
He's gonna be the man. Old as hell, man. You old.
Yeah, he's gonna demand to be on my podcast if he hears this now. So, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so basically, what people thought of me in high school, I was just this dork who loves sports and loves video games, and you know, I didn't really have. If you were gonna say that I was some sort of type, you know, whether a jock or a nerd or whatever, like I didn't really have one. You know, because I guess I don't want to say I'm versatile, but I guess that's how I was. You know, I got along with everybody pretty much. So, you know, that's how I was.
But the thing is, everything you just said, that nothing's changed 20 years later. You're still video games and,
yeah.
And sports.
Nothing's yeah, you talk about when Tracy McGrady is saying, like, oh, the league is watered down, and he's defending his era about how his era was best or whatever. I'm kind of the same way, too, you know? Like, that's how we all are. We're going to defend our era. It's like, yeah, 90s music, 90s video games, you know, 90s, you know, movies, whatever. That's how we are, man. I got stuck in the
90s. Yeah. No, I was in high school. I think part of high school for me is a blur, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And part of high school for me. It depends on the parts I focus on. You know, like I said, it does kind of stink now looking back. Now I still have a few friends I keep in touch with from high school, but overall, there's a lot of friends I had in high school I wish I kept in contact with.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Like it's easier now with Facebook around, which is in a way kind of fighting too, where you just find everybody.
And too, like there was like a phase a couple years ago where like friends of, like old friends would find me, and I didn't know who they were. I didn't remember who they were. Like, who are you again? Who are you? Who are you? Like,
yeah, right.
It was so far gone.
Yeah, it's scary, but yeah. So high school, but let's be serious though, okay. High school really never does end. I mean, you look at all the people we've all dealt with, and they still act like they're in high school. Like, everything's wrong with the world, or, you know, everything's against them, you know, and they blame someone else, and we get into fights over little things. So, I guess you can say that high school never really ended, right?
Nope. I mean, if you want to prove that, go to Twitter.
Yep.
So, mind you, the days of endless past.
Yep. Twitter is high school. Thanks, EJ.
You got it, buddy. Game over,
yeah! Hashtag blame Ray Ray.
Mo dead.